Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-278. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will then be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Baba Hakima, one of the founding members of ULU, and this month's ULU in review monthly update on ULU and Ujamaa, family-centered economics. Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, sis. It's good to be back with you. And like I say every month, it seems that these 30 days or so roll around. But again, it's good to be back with you and the family, and I'm doing well, and I hope the same is the case for you.
Yes, it is. Thank you for asking. And yes, you are correct. The time does seem to fly by, but as always, we are happy when you stop by to visit, and we look forward to what you have to say. So, Baba Hakima, where would you like to begin this month's ULU in review?
Well, I just want to remind the family and prospective members that on the third Thursday of each month, we take time out to give the family updates on what's happening in ULU. And quite frankly, it's a very exciting time. And we'll be covering some of that. We'll also take the recording from this evening's session, and we'll email it back. We'll email the link of the recording back out to the membership so that for those of us who could not be on the call this evening, they'll have the benefits of the updates and the things that were discussed. I just want to alert any members that are on the call. Please be mindful that you're pressing one on the keypad and asking good questions, solid questions, are important for this process. We sometimes will forget an important point, and you out there in the listening audience, sometimes you're able to know that point and to pull our coat, so to speak. So I want to encourage members who are listening on the call to be active in asking the critical questions so that not only members but prospective members have greater clarity in terms of our process. So I just want to get started there to remind us that we're here every month. And I want to kind of ditto what you have already indicated. All of these calls every week are archived, and members and the general public can go back to our webpage on the ULU site and go to Dare to Win. You can go to the bottom of the page and you can click it there, or you can at the top of the page with ULU Radio. And so all of our broadcasts are archived for review. So if I can, I'll get right into some discussion of the updates. Is that okay?
That's absolutely fabulous. Yes,
good. We have reported the last 2 months, or at least I know the last month, that all of the legal filings that we needed to do, we've done those and they're complete. In March of this year, at our annual meeting, we passed a resolution to drastically change our structure, and it required us to do a state filing and a federal filing, and those have been done, and again, those have been completed, and I'll give a little greater clarity to that in a moment. The work that continues is creating and editing all of the documents, the enabling, again, documents and platforms and procedures that have to go with managing the new structures. And so we continue to do that work. A very important session is coming up this Sunday. the 23rd, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we'll be hosting a special Zoom session to incubate two new ULU chapters in metropolitan Atlanta. Excuse me. One on the west side and another one on the east side. And we'll be going through a fairly detailed discussion about the process of bringing these two new ULU chapters into being, in other words, into creation, and with some detailed conversation in terms of how they are to work and what they are to produce. And for members who know members in Atlanta, whether you're located in Atlanta or whether you're located in any other location, but if you know members that are in Atlanta, reach out to them by text or by phone and remind them of the 3 o'clock session, Zoom session this Sunday. I'm already finding out from doing some calling myself that some of us have been sluggish about checking our emails and hadn't looked at the link yet. But we want to get the energy stirring so that, again, all members who are, wherever you are, reach out to members that you know in Atlanta and encourage them to be present Sunday and to make sure that they have the Zoom link for that session. Also want to mention, before I go into a little bit more detail about this Sunday, is that we want to remind all members and prospective members, maybe you'll be a member by March of this coming year, but to save the date, our annual members meeting and convention will be convened in March of 2013, March the 10th through the 13th. And you don't want to miss that meeting for all the things that will be going on. The main thing is the election of members to our board of directors. Each year in rotation, three seats are emptied and we replace new members to the board or members who are nominated and accept nomination to those seats. And in some cases and in some years, some of the members who had served 3 years are nominated and they accept as well. So not always are there new people in the seats, but that's the main thing that will be occurring in March. But there'll be some other things, some things that are informative, entertaining, and look for notices in the coming weeks about save the date for March the 10th through the 13th of next year. And it seems that we're really behind in terms of planning for the members meeting because it's so packed with activities. You know, it takes pretty much 9 months of solid planning to pull it off. So I just wanted to make that announcement. Now, what I want to spend the bulk of my time with the family this evening is talking about this coming Sunday, the 23rd, 3 o'clock, a special Zoom session to incubate or to start two new ULU chapters in Metro Atlanta. Again, one on the west side and another one on the east side. For those of us who are familiar with Atlanta, you know it's fairly spread out. And so between the east side and west side, we're probably looking at least 30 miles between those. But they're all in metropolitan Atlanta. But metropolitan Atlanta is so big that in time, we could conceivably have four or five or six ULU chapters in the metropolitan area. But this Sunday, we want to get started with identifying brothers and sisters who would be a part of a focus group, and then the membership committee, the research and business development committee, and the marketing committee will, along with the team that I'm a part of, the general manager's team, we will be working with members that are part of these focus groups to get them informed and ready to become a chartered ULU chapter. Now, we call these UBCs, ULU-based communities. Some of our members may remember that we used to call them ULU-based collectives, but if you look on the website, you'll see that that's been changed to ULU-based communities. And this is the active, energetic component of ULU, and I want to go into a little bit more detail on that as well. But to put things in perspective, I want to make mention that there are five structures in ULU, and I want to point them out. I won't go into great detail. And then I want to be sure that we understand the importance of the local chapters, the UBC, in that array of structures. The two main structures are legal entities. That's Us Lifting Us Incorporated. That's the mothership. That's the 501c3 nonprofit. Again, we nickname it the mothership. That's where all members are housed and located. And in addition to just a website, it's also a members portal, all of the software that keeps up with each member's capital account, the members who, in fact, become member owners. That's where all of that's housed. So that's one structure. The second structure is the original structure that was created in 2013, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, LLC. So the LLC structure, the business structure, on an organizational chart is located below the nonprofit mothership. So those two institutions are already in place. They're already operational, legal entities with their own individual identity, their tax numbers and legal filings and all of that. So those are two. Now I want to now focus on the other three structures. The other three structures, first of all, is the UBC, the ULU-based collective. That's the ULU chapter in local communities. Initially, most of them are going to be located in the U.S. But as many of us know, we have members in other places in the world. We have a few members in Canada, in Europe, East Africa, West Africa, South Africa, Korea, Hawaii, the Caribbean. So we can have members anywhere. They're African people. So so the UBCs, the ULU-based collectives, the other two structures, and for many people, this will be the first time they'll hear of this. In the UBCs, the members who are member owners or members who are building equity in ULU, quote-unquote investors, they will caucus or form a committee. It's called a FIC, F-I-C. It's Finance and Investment Caucus. They will function like an investment club inside of the local UBC chapter. And so the UBC itself will function as a non-incorporated institution. It won't have to be a legal entity. Similar, the FIC itself, even though it's a caucus or a specialized committee inside of the local chapter, will probably function as a non-incorporated association as well. The FIC focuses more on analyzing, planning, and refining business ideas so that once they are approved and worked on and refined and a strong business plan is developed and a decision is made to approve it and fund it, it is the FIC, the Finance and Investment Caucus of each UBC, that are the prime movers in the LLC, in the for-profit arena. And this may be confusing to some of you, but believe me, it'll become clear as we go, and you'll see how much power it has in it. So let's go back, and we've talked about four of them, then I'm going to talk about the fifth one in a moment. So the first one is the nonprofit mothership, and on an organizational chart, you would see the for-profit Us Lift and Us Economic Development Cooperative LLC underneath the mothership. And then on an organizational chart, you would see the UBCs or the local ULU chapters, that two of which we're going to start right away in Atlanta. They would be on the top part of the chart in the nonprofit area. As a part of the UBC, as I've indicated, there's a specialized committee called the FIC, Finance and Investment Caucus, and they function like an investment club. The fifth that will be multiplied many times coming that I want to focus on now is the ULU group-owned enterprise, the businesses of ULU. These are all for-profit business enterprises, not predatory, but are expected to provide needed goods and services, are expected to create jobs that are competitive in the marketplace. In other words, they pay a good salary. Mm-hmm. And so create jobs, provide needed goods and services that stimulate the local economy. And as they mature and become profitable, they provide ongoing residual benefits back to the community. Unlike a typical business organization in our community, when they generate profits, they generate profits for an owner or a small group of owners, or maybe even a larger group of owners. But typically, in most cases, the surplus is taken away from our community and empowers other communities. Mm-hmm. And in those situations where the businesses are owned by us and maybe we are based in our community and we want to partner with those and lift those up, but because of the way they're structured, they're not usually, or I shouldn't say usually, they're never scaled up enough such that they enter into a power relationship with other businesses and institutions in the business arena, trade and commerce arena, so that they make a significant difference. The ULU group-owned business enterprises, because they are owned by our community, controlled by our community, and produce a residual benefit week after week, month after month, year after year, generations after generations, are unique. Ulu, us lifting us, is involved in creating an infrastructure that at the end of its process produces and launches business structures, business devices that are unlike anything we've ever produced. These are, you talked earlier about the machinery of economic self-determination. These group-owned enterprises, ULU, group-owned enterprises, are the essence of machinery that produce a benefit for our community. And as they grow in size and grow in number, they produce a synergistic effect that, in essence, is the foundation and the energy that creates and sustains a black economy that puts us in competition, good competition, with all of the economies regionally, nationally, and globally. So our meeting on the 23rd of this month, next Sunday, is to incubate the UBCs, which are the creative, energetic incubators of the tools that I speak of when I talk about the ULU group-owned enterprise, this unique business form. If a person doesn't know what they're looking at, they may think it's just an ordinary business, because for the public, it will behave in similar ways to most businesses. However, because it's owned by the community, controlled by the community, and the benefits accrue to the community, it in essence is a machine that, because of its unique structure and intent, provides an ongoing benefit on an ongoing basis. And again, the proliferation of those, and we hopefully can get some questions and clarification, and I invite you to ask the tough questions too, because it's important that we understand that the economic space on the planet, for the most part, is dominated by institutions that glorify the position of the individual in the culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What we are now doing and going back to our roots, and we are creating new institutions that glorify the family or the collective, that benefit, in other words, its character, its nature, its instincts as a business form, is to do what's in the best interest of the collective, always. And because of the way it's structured, there is no opportunity for it to be purchased from entities outside of the community. There is no opportunity for it to yield surplus to entities outside of our community. Mm-hmm. And I'll stop there, and then let you and I and maybe some others who would call in, let's dig deeper in understanding how it is that we are in the process of bringing to life a new economic creature, a new economic mm-hmm. device that once it's launched, once it becomes operational, and the hope is that it will have a lifespan, that it will live forever, you know, as long as mm-hmm. the community and people are involved, that it will continue, but that it, because of its nature, it behaves differently in the culture and in the society and produces a very specific benefit for the black community. And the proliferation of these help in a very significant and concrete way to change the environment of the local community such that it becomes progressively more and more a result of our shaping, a result of our molding, a result of being molded into what we would prefer as opposed to what entities and other communities would prefer. So I'll stop there and take a breather, and then
okay.
and then we'll go deeper.
Okay. So I was looking at an article today where they said that the State Department, the U.S. State Department, was forcing, I think it was the country of Ecuador in South America, to put on drag queen, you know, story hour or whatever that they have in the schools here. They're pushing the drag queen story and exposing the children to drag queens and the family. And so they're bringing this whole new, I would say, a new concept to the country of Ecuador. It's being forced on them by the United States government, I guess, as part of their aid package. Now you have to do this. You know, they always attach stuff to the aid that they give people. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, see, when UNU is functioning properly, we can stop that because we would have the economic clout to have a political pushback. The U.S. State Department couldn't come to a country where we're functioning and say, you have to take, you know, number one, we wouldn't need their money, okay?
Yeah.
Because we would, the goal is self-sufficiency and sovereignty, so we wouldn't need their money. But they definitely would not be able to force anything on us, good, bad, or indifferent. We get to say what we want, not, you know, someone totally outside of ourselves. So to me, that was an immediate place where I could see UNU fighting back against or being a buffer. It's not even like we have to fight. It's just, that's not going to happen here.
Yeah. And so, let's look at it even deeper because things happen similarly here in Atlanta or in Charlotte. There are things that are going on in our schools, at the rec centers, and other institutions that are not necessarily wholesome. But the success of UNU and the local chapters or the UBCs, as they mature, not only from an economic standpoint, but from a community development, cultural, social, political standpoint, then even without fanfare, you begin to have an impact on what goes on in the schools. Mm-hmm. And there's a unique example that I want to share with you and the family. My wife taught in the Atlanta Metropolitan Schools for, you know, she retired as an educator here in Atlanta. And after she retired, she went back to sub a few years. And a couple of times she subbed on the north side in a community near the governor's mansion. Now, this is city of Atlanta, so the school she retired from is in the city of Atlanta as well. And they both should run from the same script. But she found when she went to those schools that was not the case. The schools on the north side and the communities that knew themselves and that were sensitive that they were going to run those communities based on their culture, their desires, and they had the clout to do so, but they didn't have to go down to the school board or the city hall and raise hell. They just simply, through the teachers, through the administrators, through the staff at the school, and the parents, they made sure that that school reflected them and what they value. Mm-hmm. So in case of the Central American company, that country that you talked about, at the height of the power, yes, you'd be able to protect the country and the culture from penetration based on those schemes. But at the community level, at the village level, is where the rubber really meets the road. You want to be able at that level to have sufficient clarity and the base institutions in place so that even if the federal government of that country is corrupt, you still have power and control at the community level. Now, we call our brand of economics, we call it New Ujamaa, or family-centered economics. So the power of it is our ability at the base level, at the community neighborhood level, to have an impact on what happens in those daycare centers, in those elementary schools, in those after-school programs, the rec centers, and then you build up from there. But, you know, what you talked about, that's diabolical. That's the essence of aid. When you accept those aid packages, you know, a lot of strings are attached. So thank you for sharing that with me and the family.
My pleasure. We have a caller. I'm going to open the line here. Okay, caller with the last four digits, 3440. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Greetings, Sister Q, Baba Hekima. My pleasure to join you all this evening. The conversation and the update is inspiring and enlightening. And I hope that the family is listening and will join us Sunday, all right, to continue this process. As you know, as both of you know, as the family know, this is October, and in a few days, all hell will break out at these polling places. All right, if you have not already been embedded with people coming up to you, doing this and doing that, trying to sway you one way or the other. What do you see as the role of the UBCs, particularly those that are stationed here in the U.S. or anywhere where there might be, you know, this kind of activity periodically, ever so often? What role do you see the UBCs playing? All right. And particularly as we become bombarded by the two parties that are financed by corporations and use their influence, the media, all right, to propagandize, all right, supposedly their platform, which they want the electorate to support. What role do you see the development of the UBCs and FIC, if that's also going to be included in that, a plan, particularly during these times of the year? Thank you, and I'll listen offline.
Well, thank you, Brother Shabaka, for the question. And as we mature and as we get further into the workings of the Ulu-based collective, Olu-based community, rather, the UBC, obviously local elections have an impact. Well, all elections have an impact, but very often the impact of what's happening locally is magnified in many cases more important than what happens on the national level. And so we want to be sensitive, and what we want to do is create within the local ULU chapter, the UBC, an awareness of its surrounding, its neighborhood, its communities, so that they can perform effectively in terms of what they are facing. But we want the UBCs to be rooted day-to-day in what is good for the long-term health and welfare of that neighborhood, of that community. And sometimes, and in many cases, it does not even affect or is affected by politics, or in some cases so and in some cases not. But yes, in terms of the gyrations of the political parties, and sometimes it's not just two political parties, sometimes it's three and four. And but we want the ULU family and the ULU-based communities to be rooted in community so that they're not swayed left and right, up and down, and put on a treadmill based on the political machination, of these political parties. And remember, the political parties are simply the left wing and right wing of capitalism. And so it behooves us to be smart in helping to shape policy. But the policy overall that's going to be most important for us is how we structure ourselves and how we perform in support of each other. And certainly we want part of that performance is to be prudent and wise as it relates to shaping to the extent that we can the institutions that impact our day-to-day lives and impact the total community. So, in Georgia, we're very sensitive to all the things in terms of politics that's happening because this is one of the epicenters of, politics this go round and these midterm elections. So thank you for the question. But again, my point is that we really want to be governed by a good understanding of what is good for us in the long term and have plans and structures and resource dedication and allocation to making sure that we're on point with what it is that we got to do for ourselves in the local communities, even when things look crazy at City Hall or at the State House or in Washington, D.C., or at the U.N. and any other place as well. Again, thank you for the question.
Thank you for the question, Brother Shabaka. Barbara Hakima, what the question that Brother Shabaka raised reminded me of the necessity of the cultural centers within the ULU structure, because that would be a place to educate the ULU members and the community and give them a logical way of looking at the electoral process rather than it being a emotional kind of thing that we have going on now.
You're right. Yeah, and in case people don't understand what you're talking about when you talk about cultural centers, a good part of our discussion and a good part of our focus going forward will be to establish institutions in the community that are self-perpetuating from a commerce or business standpoint, but that also serve as places where we come together face-to-face. I mean, we've gotten used to this virtual space in the last, 3 years or so. But as African people, we definitely value and benefit from opportunities to come together and stay together. I was speaking with a gentleman last night, a brother last night, and just reminding him that I moved to Atlanta from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And in many spots in Milwaukee, there's a bar or tavern on every corner. And in some cases, more than one bar or tavern on every corner. And in some cases, a person will go to one tavern and live 50 years in the neighborhood and never go to the other one. That's their private waterhole attack. Because they can go there and get support, validation. In other words, it's not just a place where, they take a drink and their senses are altered, but they come and they get rejuvenated because of the familyhood that existed. But there are other locations as well. But we want to be in the communities where there are UBCs. Part of our planning is to also have facilities where we, on occasions, have special events, but on an ongoing basis, bump into each other because they are commercial hubs as well. One of our members is proposing that each of these centers, in addition to being a place where we just kind of meet and greet, that it be a produce market, it be a restaurant, and it be a coffee house, combined on the same roof, but with a layout that accommodates people hanging out and conversing. And I just mentioned one other thing in my life that was impactful. I think it was in 67 and 68, no, 66 and 67, when I lived in East Chicago, Indiana, there was a black business owner of a tavern. The name of the tavern was Buddy's Buzz Box. And every Thursday, he closed the bar down, no drinks, and he had a politician or a business person in the community come in and sit on the bar and face very serious questions from the community. But it was a very impactful situation and an opportunity out of a business structure to bring people together. But, yeah, thanks for that, reminding us of the cultural center.
Okay, so Baba Hakima, do you want to speak about the fifth element now?
Yeah. The fifth element again is the businesses that are incubated by the process. You got the two major structures: the nonprofit and the LLC for-profit, then you got the UBCs and the FIC, or the investment club aspect in the UBC. But all of it is to the goal of everything that we're doing is ultimately to produce this fifth element, the ULU, Group-owned enterprises, and we'll probably come up with another name for them as we go. I sometimes refer to them as Uhuru devices, freedom devices, but they're businesses. But because of how they behave and deposit benefits, they empower the community just through their existence. Remember, I think all of us know, we may not give voice to it, but almost every institution that we can think of in the American context or in the capitalist West context has a meter attached to it. And as it performs over and over, a surplus or a portion of the cash flow is deposited into this little side box, you know, whether it's for taxes or profits for owners, but all of them spin off a benefit, but they do not spin off a benefit for the community. The benefit are generally for individuals or small groups of individuals, for government, and I'm not sure the other entities, but even when we talk about government, government is simply another form of capitalist business enterprise. The reason there is so much fervor and rancor about elections in large part is because they handle so much money and they're able to reward successful politicians, in some cases, more money than they could make in business. So I view politics as just another level of commerce. You're buying and selling not widgets, but you're buying and selling or peddling influence all along the line. You know, people are getting paid above the table, under the table. And so, but that fifth element is what liberates us, is what gives us the structural, mechanical, economic activity generating capacity to plow ourselves from where we are to where we want to go. Right now, because of simple kinds of things, with individual business ownership, you cannot create a Black Wall Street in the 21st century. I mean, here in Atlanta, we have a marketplace that's called the new Black Street, Wall Street Marketplace. It's a nice facility out of closed out, I think, Target store, and there are many stores and kiosks of black-owned business enterprises. But when we think of economic empowerment today, and if the only tools that we have are individually owned businesses, we will never build it. Because the success of Tulsa, of Auburn Avenue here in Atlanta, or Hayti in Durham, or wherever we look at these over 100 communities of business excellence in the 18th and early 1900s, the ingredient that they had in place that helped them to succeed does not exist now, and that was forced segregation. Even if you had excess capital and you wanted to take it across the tracks, you could get hung for that. So you were forced to keep the revenue within your community. And when we look at Tulsa, the Native Americans did business in Tulsa. The Chinese that were working on the railroads did business in Tulsa. And the blacks themselves did business in Tulsa. But it didn't take Europeans long to understand that you couldn't leave us alone, because we would find a way to generate power. And so not only did they disrupt it with the riots, But we built back, and they understood that they had to manipulate our taste and our desire. So they courted our dollars and welcomed us to go into Tulsa proper to spend our money and created the notion that that was progress. So if we want to have intact communities of business excellence today, the container or the walls of environment cannot be for segregation. The walls have to be love and an appreciation for us, and specific institutions and devices that naturally return benefits to us. Now, in our case, our devices, our ULU, group-owned enterprise, in addition to creating jobs, to providing needs and goods and services, and in addition to returning a dividend to qualified members, also contribute to charity in the local communities, and also provide a bonus to the workers. And because it's the workers who made it happen. Not only do the workers in successful ULU businesses realize a fair wage or compensation for their labor, but they also receive a part of the surplus, a good part of the surplus. But also I want to make mention that inside of these enterprises, the culture that is fostered there is a family-centered culture. Yes, we got to get the widgets out the door. We got to produce the good widgets, and we got to perform excellently in that environment. But it's a team environment. There's a team leader that's approved by the parent structure, but a wholesome business and working environment, a wholesome partner in terms of the community. Overall, everything that we do at the end is for the empowerment of us as a people, utilizing everything that we're talked about, but in particular, this unique business structure that initially will be small, but eventually medium-sized, large, regional, global, and in every industry. We're going to have to look at banking as an industry, insurance as an industry, transportation, hospitality, agriculture. So that's the fifth element, the ULU group-owned enterprises, and we'll talk even in greater detail about that this coming Sunday. And I want to thank you, sis, for holding down the fort every week and and providing a platform and a soothing platform at that for us to commune with each other. And I guess, you know, unless there's another question that you have about that fifth element. That fifth element is where the rubber meets the road, and it differentiates us and our performance in the business arena in trade and commerce from every other entity that we know of on the planet. Also distinct from even cooperatives, because cooperatives are owned by its workers or its members. The ULU enterprise is owned by its community, broader than its workers and broader than its the people who use it. And so So we will have discussions about that again, maybe in greater detail this Sunday, because this Sunday I'll be working with an organizational chart, and you can actually see it depicted on a graph, and it will be easier to grasp what we're saying. All right, sis, I appreciate you.
I appreciate you, and thank you for the update. We look forward to the call on Sunday. And to reiterate, the call Sunday is for the institution. You want to institutionalize UBCs in Atlanta. However, the call is open to all ULU members. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. Because we want members in the other cities to begin to look over the shoulder of what we're doing here in Atlanta and get their whistles wet and get their excitement glands going, because we don't want to be long afterwards establishing chapters in other cities as well. Yeah, the call Sunday, the invitation has gone out to the total membership. The general public will not be invited to that Zoom session. It will just be for members. But for prospective members, you know, you'll be invited to join the family when it is that you make the decision to become a member. And prospective members, simply go to our website, usliftinus.com, and click on the Join tab. But you want to look at the website and review it and weigh it, and maybe even call people, brothers and sisters that you know who are already members, or maybe even reach out to us with questions so that you're well informed. But we will be building membership, and we will be proliferating local chapters, starting in Atlanta, but in other cities as well, following the examples we said here in Atlanta. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. And thank you for the great update.
Thank you.
Also, we want to thank everyone that joined us this evening. Please join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Live. Peace.